Ladies and gentlemen,
you want experience during your football season? Well, buckle up, sweet cheeks.
That's all we need.
We've got all the experience in the world. This is I Want Your Flex with Dan Beyer and Mike Harmon. Mike and Dan break down everything you need to set your lineups. From position rankings to starts and sits, the guys help you make those hard decisions. And now, let's get your flex on. Here's Dan Beyer and Mike Harmon.
Week 12 is in the books. We bring you another edition of I Want Your Flex. Get Mike on Twitter at Swollen Dome. You can find me on Twitter at Dan Beyer on Fox. I'm going to tell you something that is only important to me, Mike, and our executive producer, Ryan Bersinger. We're going to let you in on a little secret, okay? Here's the secret. We just did a 45-minute podcast, and the computer crashed, so there's no record of it. So what we are doing now is we are giving you a new episode of I Want Your Flex that Mike Harmon and I just did over the last 45 minutes. That's how things are going in Week 12. If you thought the Seahawks and Washington football team was bad, wait till you hear about the computers at Fox Sports Radio. No, just kidding. It was just a bug, Mike. That's all it was. That's all it was.
Well, you got to fix the glitch. And for you and other Seahawks fantasy owners, and certainly for fans, they're trying to fix all those glitches. Because it's glitch all the way through, from the construction of the roster to the coaching staff down to Russell Wilson and all the players. Yeah, I thought you were subdued there for a moment just because of what we witnessed on Monday Night Football, which was maybe, you know, you had some highlights playing in between, you know, our takes. But I'm going to speak in double time, so we're going to get all the information in half the time.
The great thing is when I'm really surprised by Mike's advice, just know that I heard about it an hour ago. So just know that it's a great
wow.
acting job by myself. No, we'll keep it fresh. We'll keep it fun, because Monday night was anything but fun for someone like me who's a Seahawks fan. And I don't know if football fans even had fun on Monday night, and I'm not sure if they had fun on Sunday night either, but we will try to provide some fun with you. Here's my takeaway from the Seahawks and Washington football game. I do like Antonio Gibson's upside moving forward. I do think that he is a viable, strong option, and it's in the evidence by his 20-plus carries that he had against Seattle. And remember, this was a guy who was a college wide receiver, ended up transitioning to the running back position. So he is still kind of learning the position in the National Football League. I like Antonio Gibson's future for the rest of this season and also moving forward. For the Seattle Seahawks, I don't have any temperature on them fantasy-wise. I wouldn't play any of them right now for the rest of the season, the way things are going with the Seahawks.
Yeah, it's a final on that. Let's start with Gibson first. I think I ranked him 7th or 8th coming into the season, and based on the attrition at the running back position, I might end up being right. Even though to this point, you know, this is the first time he gets to that century mark on the year. So what's also been impressive is weeks ago it was reported he was dealing with this severe shin injury that was supposed to take him out. Mm-hmm. So there was some, you know, prospective work for Jared Patterson and maybe some other running backs to leech in, you know, beyond what McKissick does as a receiver. But, you know, Gibson's been fantastic, and all of a sudden Washington potentially lurking around the playoff picture. I think Ron Rivera complained too early about the schedule, but we'll get to that another time. As for your beloved Seahawks, Russell Wilson looks terrible. And he has since he's come back from this injury. So I don't know how much of the injury, how much we then look at the rest of the roster construction. We can talk about the defense and the inability to get off the field. The fact that the offense has held the ball for fewer than 40 minutes the last two games combined, which is just mind-boggling. The fact that you can't get DK Metcalf the ball at all. Tyler Lockett yeah. starts out strong and then disappears. And then you bring back the same running backs who couldn't stay healthy and let you down a year ago, that you thought somehow they, behind a shoddy offensive line, were suddenly going to be able to be propped up and give you any kind of balance. It's a bad construction, and Pete Carroll looks like he needs a hug, like he's lost out there.
No, you need something more than a hug. They have an offense that can't stay on the field and a defense that can't get off the field. And when you put those together, you get losers of six of your last seven. That's where the
Fire
Seahawks
them all, Dan.
Are. And if you're a Seahawks owner in fantasy, you are likely a loser as well. If you've been streaming defenses from our good buddy Ryan Bershinger, you probably have been losing as well. Just to let you know, Bershinger streamed the Jacksonville defense this week and got 1 point, I believe, and then streamed the Texans defense and got 4 points against the New York Jets. So
four
his
for
advice,
Jacksonville and what, eight for
oh,
eight
that's
for
what
Texans.
It was?
Yeah, four
okay.
for Jacksonville, oh. eight for the Texans.
Here's the great thing about it is, again, we did this an hour ago, and I already forgot the points that he got from the Texans and the Jaguars.
Well, they were forgettable
the streaming
pickups,
defenses.
Yeah.
Hey, it happens. Ryan Bershinger will be back in our next episode, as you just heard him there, with some more streaming defense advice for Week 13. It won't be the Packers, Browns, Titans, or Panthers, Mike, because those four squads are on bye in Week 13. But there are already some big storylines heading into the final third of the regular season. And we start, why not start at the top of the fantasy draft that you likely had in August, where Christian McCaffrey went first overall. As we found out on Monday, now Christian McCaffrey done for the season with an ankle injury. It's not only because the ankle injury is severe, but it's also because Christian McCaffrey was put on IR for the second time this season, which then rules him out for the rest of the year. You can't just be toggling back all season long. They let you do that once. You can't do it twice, Mike. So CMC done for the year. And I really put into question on where his draft value would be at the start of the 2022 season, where I don't think that you could put CMC atop your draft boards.
No, I think it, as you look at it, you know, if you stopped it right now, it's very difficult to sort the guys out at the top. I guess it becomes Derrick Henry, but he's coming off of severe injury.
Mm-hmm.
Dalvin Cook can't finish seasons. We'll get into him deeper in a moment. But, you know, when you look at McCaffrey, the lack of the ability to stay on the field two straight years, a guy you counted on for standard leagues, which is, I guess, not standard anymore. I guess PPR is probably tipped the scales there at last look. But, you know, behind a bad offensive line, it was going to be hot route kind of completions, whether it was Darnold, Walker, or Cam Newton. And now that's gone. So welcome back in Chuba Hubbard. Acquits himself fairly nicely, right? Can put up decent numbers, but he's not a game changer. You know, he might catch a handful of passes, so in PPR leagues, giving you a little bit of help. But the rest of that offense is just so bogged down behind a bad offensive line that it's awful difficult to think you're going to get major contributions. He's a back-end number two at this point. McCaffrey, I think we might have to do that, Dan. I mean, certainly he's not going to be on any MVP pyramid that you're putting out on Fox Sports radio and on your Twitter account at Dan Beyer on Fox. But I don't even know if he's on the pyramid if we were to give it those 10 slots, you know, for top 10 picks next year based on these injuries.
This is how bad it's gotten for Christian McCaffrey. In the last two seasons, he's played a combined 10 games. So 10 games in 2020 and 2021, total of 10 games. If you are a Christian McCaffrey owner, you know that Christian McCaffrey left the game against the Dolphins with an ankle injury, and he also left the game against the Texans earlier this season with a hamstring injury. So Christian McCaffrey, in the seven games that he played this season, actually only played five full games. Then you go to the 2020 season where he played early on, two games before getting injured, and then returned for a random game against Kansas City where he ended up getting injured in that game. It was late in the game, if I remember. But even though he's played in 10 games, Mike, he hasn't even given you 10 full games because he's had to leave a couple of those with injury. If for holdover prospects, I'd be really concerned in that aspect. Or if you're, especially if you're in a league where you have to give up a draft pick from where you held him over, I'd have real concerns if I was a Christian McCaffrey owner, considering how this season ended, much like the 2020 campaign.
Yeah, if you're only holding over one, I'm pushing him back in. And seeing, yep. Hey, look, if I want to redraft him in the second round, assuming you get a round-for-round redo, as I think that's fairly standard. But I can't put a lot of stock in the fact that he comes back bigger, faster, stronger. Because there's also a lot of other things that have to happen for that team that I would need to buy back in on, right? What's the quarterback position look like? They have to pay Darnold again, but does that mean he's the starter? Is he just there as a highly overpaid? Or do they cut bait altogether and just say, you know what, we're going to eat the money?
Yeah.
In the NFL, that's a hard number at $18, $19 million to just eat. But you figure you've got Darnold and another quarterback and then a third, probably drafted in the third day of the draft to round it out. You've got an offensive line that needs a lot of work and a defense that probably isn't as bad as some of the numbers would suggest based on the fact that, well, the offense hasn't been able to stay on the field. Going back to that problem, chicken egg, as we were talking about with the Seahawks there briefly. So, yeah, I'm not going down that well, Dan. You can take that plunge for me if you want, and I'll stand back as an interested observer.
I'd be worried about Dalvin Cook as well. Dalvin Cook has not played a full season in any of his seasons in the National Football League, and 2021 is no different. He already missed games this season, so him being out now with a torn labrum and a shoulder dislocation doesn't change the fact that he wasn't going to play a full 2021 season. But now as you're entering the final third of this regular season, you're not going to have Dalvin Cook for at least the next 2 weeks. That's at least with Cook's injury. Mike, there's another situation now in Minnesota where the Cook factor has been eliminated, and I think it's going to trickle down to a couple of important pieces down the stretch run.
Well, you've seen Madison with a couple of 100-yard games, and he has caught the ball out of the backfield a handful of time in each of those big starts. And then you had that nothing effort against Cleveland, you know, the enigmatic Cleveland Browns. But we could do a whole podcast episode devoted to them another time. But
we could do two of them. We could do one, and then we could do it again immediately
after. We can. And then we can do predictions of here's Baker Mayfield. He in his comeback and telling all his critics to eat it. And here's continued talk of how injured he is while he's on the field. Look, you can't have it both. I'm sorry. If you're playing through, you get criticized as if you were 100%. That's just the way football works. I'm sorry. There's no mulligans for, hey, he was banged up. Give it the old college try. But for Madison, I'm worried that the trickle-down is Kirk Cousins, who's been really efficient. Now, obviously, a couple of gaffes in the Week 12 game that will live in infamy, as it were, and he threw his third interception of the year. But you're still just looking at operational efficiency. He's been fantastic, but part of that is the threat of what Cook is as a runner and when he leaks out as a receiver out of the backfield. So I think you have a little bit of a downgrade there in terms of what this offense will be. Madison rates as a mid to back end two based on number of touches, but overall for the offense, I wonder how much it affects when we get down into the red zone, how that's going to affect Adam Thielen's numbers, and maybe not Jefferson to the same degree, but certainly Thielen given the reliance there in the red zone.
The biggest injury of Week 12 may have come from that Vikings 49ers game, but it actually may have come from the 49ers side of things. Debo Samuel, who has been absolutely magnificent over the last 3 weeks or so, went down with a groin injury against the Vikings. Kyle Shanahan said Monday about 1 to 2 weeks. Who knows with a groin injury, Mike, but Debo Samuel is going to be a big piece missing from that 49er team that is seemingly making quite a push down the stretch run.
Playing good defense, they get George Kittle back, and they've been very creative in getting the ball into Debo Samuel's hands. You look at it in the game of Week 12, you know, 6 carries, 66 yards, you know, that doesn't sit well, Dan. You know, I'm a grew up in the religious household, so I think that 666 gets me a little freaked out. But you look at it, back-to-back weeks, he only had one catch. So doing the damage as a runner is something now Kyle Shanahan's got to figure out how to get that effectiveness through some combination of players. We both, I think, love what we've seen from Elijah Mitchell. He was the waiver wire darling all those weeks ago when out of the gate Mostert gets hurt. So anybody that had shares in Mostert went scrambling. I certainly was among them. And I had Debo Samuel there, who's given me just crazy numbers. You know, goes over 1,000 yards receiving on the year, averaging 18 yards per catch. But that's been such an afterthought as they go to the identity that they won with. See, we get to bring Jim Harbaugh back into the mix because that was the identity, right? Run the football. God. Sorry. I didn't mean to do it, buddy. I didn't.
You did not do that in the first time we did this.
No, I
didn't. Man, jeez. Take the dagger right to me.
No, but that was the identity of that team in San Francisco. I was just trying to make a point that sometimes you can throw back even though your coaching staff has changed and you're supposed to be the genius for other reasons. You know, sometimes you can go simple and just say, hey, run the football. And that's what they've done effectively. And now it's a question of, you know, for Jimmy Garoppolo, does the loss of Deebo Samuel mean that he's got to go back to the passing game a little bit more? Right, because you've been getting that extra boost out of the creativity in the run game. Can Ayuk take some of those carries? Can you figure out a way to scheme him open a little bit more? Because the downfield side of the passing game has been missing for much of these last few weeks. So, you know, kind of curious to see how they adapt, but certainly a downgrade across the board, except for Mitchell, whose workload only seems like it'll increase.
Brandon Ayuk's numbers increasing some, I think, kind of stepping in the Deebo role of maybe being a receiver. It could be, if you have Brandon Ayuk, maybe a push there. But here's the maybe the most important thing about the 49ers. This is their schedule the rest of the way. Seahawks, Bengals, Falcons, Titans, Texans, and then they end with the Rams. And maybe week 18, you're playing daily fantasy. But take the Rams even out of it, and I don't know how good their defense even is right now, Mike. That's a pretty savory run, with maybe Cincinnati being the only defense that you would say, I'm not too sure, you know, maybe they could give a push, but things just setting up really, really well for the San Francisco 49ers down the stretch run. So hopefully for Deebo Samuel owners, he gets healthy. Maybe it's an opportunity for you to acquire him if he is available because of his injury. But at least a lot to look up for if you are a San Francisco 49ers fan. Those are some of the big storylines heading into Week 13. We're going to deal with more of them at the end because we've got Thursday night's game between the Cowboys and the Saints, and there are a lot of things going on with those two teams. But, Mike, let's start to look at some waiver wire pickups, guys you need to make claims on this week, some names that may have popped up in Week 12 or maybe even popped up earlier but are still kind of under the radar. What do you like waiver wire heading into this week?
Well, I've been a big believer of the Tua Tagovailoa world there in Miami. It's not always a pretty ball. It's got a little bit of float to it at times, but you know, you've got a couple of guys in Jalen Waddle and now the return of Devontae Parker that give you some real weapons on the outside. And look, we know the run game's not particularly good, so it's going to become the short pass and try to get some yak, right? Scheme it open to the wide receiver screens and little 5 yard in and see if you can make some hay. When you look at Parker, you know, first four games of the year went 7-9, 7-9 in terms of his target counts. See, I want to talk a target account because of you know, Cyber Monday and anyway, I'll leave it there alone. 8 catches out of 11 targets, 85 yards in his return. So the opportunity is there. Tua is owned in about 40% of leagues. Parker owned in far less because missing the games that he did, he got dropped to the waiver wire. But you look at Tua giving you some decent numbers and with a couple of bye weeks still outstanding. Look, part of it is playing defense as well and looking ahead at schedules that there might be that one matchup that he's worthwhile. You want to keep churning those bench slots as you can. You've got the Bourne identity, double Bourne, Bourne again, all those jokes that Berman made at halftime as Kendrick Bourne has a couple of touchdown catches, 3 or more targets in all but one game this year. He's only owned in 20% of leagues. Seems to have become a pretty fair go-to guy for Mac Jones, who's also available in well over 2/3 of fantasy leagues right now. So the two of them double up, as it were. You've got
Hold on. Were there any Born to Run references with Chris Berman?
Oh, you know what? I didn't hear one today.
Kendrick Born to Run.
That's pretty good.
That to me would be right up Berman's alley.
That's nice. Like I would like to see what his full notes are on players, though. You know, whether he's got like 35 nicknames and he just crosses them off one at a time.
Yeah. I think he just finds one and sticks with it.
Okay.
Right? I mean, because maybe he tries out others and we don't know it because maybe they don't last. But then when one does, you know, stick, he's just like, okay, let's close the book on that one.
Well, because I do remember going to a comedy club here in Southern California, and Jay Leno, when he was still doing the Tonight Show, would regularly do it down in Hermosa Beach at the Comedy and Magic Club. And there'd be, you know, stand-up, but then he'd also try out jokes for the week to come.
Uh-huh.
And he'd have two piles, the ones that got the groans or no response at all, and ones that made the people that he was focused on laugh.
Yeah.
And if the latter, it was usually a pretty small stack, but you can guarantee by Tuesday night, they showed up on the show.
It's interesting because that actually happened one time when I went to a show and we went to go see Jay Moore, and obviously, you know, worked with Jay and loved Jay's comedy. And Jay's like, come on, I'm doing a show down at Melrose. Why don't you hang out? So we went out, and Jerry Seinfeld was going to be on Letterman that next week.
Oh,
and
wow.
So all of a sudden, Jerry Seinfeld walks in and does what Leno does, tries his jokes out on us. So we got about 15 minutes of Jerry Seinfeld. You know, Jay hops on stage and is like, you know, like, hey, everybody, you know, like, heck, when this guy wants the stage, you know, come on in. And we're like, what the heck's going on? And sure enough, Jerry Seinfeld walks in. So that's one of the cool things when you go to comedy shows in Southern California, those things can happen.
That's a nice little bonus for you right there. How about a couple of running backs to kind of finish things off here? Desperation when you look at Austin Walter, nice story. 9 carries, 38 yards, and a touchdown with Michael Carter to the IR. That opportunity does knock. Just a question of how much you want to trust the Jets. You got Matt Breida in Buffalo. Again, how much you want to touch the Buffalo run game? I don't know. But catching the ball out of the backfield, and you're looking at just owned in about 15% of leagues. If nothing else, it becomes one of those defensive plays because Devin Singletary not getting the job done. Zach Moss has been either ineffective or out of the lineup due to injury, so we push him to the side. So Breida opens up as an opportunist here. You got Jamal Williams of the fighting Dan Campbells, as we call them, on the Sunday morning show, and we've adopted it here on the podcast, Dan. 15 carries, 65 yards, and another 5 catches for 18 yards against Chicago and DeAndre Swift. Not sure how long he's going to be hampered / sidelined, so that's certainly someone that we're watching here. The explosiveness there. Boston Scott is part of a crowded backfield in Philly, but double-digit carries, 4 of 6. Curious to see what they do. Thanks for that disappointing effort as a team against the Giants. Bad job by you. And then you got Dontrell Hilliard, the next man up in Tennessee. 12 carries, 131, and a score. Owned in 30% of leagues, the speculative play paid off. And for now, he's running unopposed. It's like a lot of your local political races.
Those are the guys you got to pick up for your squad as waiver wire action is heating up in week 13. I liked Breida. I had him written down. I had Kendrick Bourne. Van Jefferson is still available in a lot more leagues than you would think. So go and grab him if he's still out there. Then I'll give you a little tight end love. You know, Darren Waller's been banged up. Foster Moreau would be a guy that you could look at with the Raiders. And Jack Doyle had his best game of the season for Indianapolis, even though the Colts threw the heck out of the ball against the Buccaneers. I still think that if you're looking for some tight end help, that Jack Doyle could be a guy that you could look at. So something to look at with Week 13. I still don't know why the Colts attempted 26 straight pass plays. I don't care how good that Buccaneers defense is. When you have Jonathan Taylor, you have to run the ball. You have to attempt to run the ball. And even if it didn't work at first, that's okay. That's why you keep running the football. And I think that the Colts kind of lost their way in week 12.
Vita Vea.
Just me. Yeah. You can't just quit, especially when it's your identity. And I think that the Colts got away with from some of their stuff.
I would agree, right? You struggled in the first quarter and then don't give them the ball in the fourth. You pass the ball pretty well, but you got to know that your bread and butter has been, will be forever, that offensive line and Jonathan Taylor. And going away from that, if nothing else, what you did was shorten up possessions and you let Tom Brady work some magic. And so long as he's got Gronkowski and his other best friend, Leonard Fournette, running around, you're going to be in trouble.
All right, let's talk about some Cowboys and Saints, because that's what gets things going on Thursday night. Week 13 begins in New Orleans, and it begins with the Cowboys dealing with a COVID situation, one that includes their head coach not being around. Ezekiel Elliott did practice earlier in the week. Alvin Kamara got in a limited practice. A lot going on with this Cowboys-Saints showdown on Thursday night, Mike.
Hopefully we're breaking this would-be streak, Dan. Two bad games in a row. We need a dandy on Thursday night to cleanse the palate. Either way, we'll still watch in droves. Taysom Hill takes over in New Orleans. That's where we start. Expectation that he's under center to try to jumpstart this offense. What does that mean? Well, probably that he runs the ball a bunch and certainly takes any red zone snaps himself. As for the passing side of it, yeah, the Dallas back seven's gettable, but who's getting them? Right, working with the second unit, I guess we try to find the diamonds in the rough. But now, you know, we're jockeying for playoff seeding, you know, and things of that nature. So trying to just say, okay, this guy worked with Taysom Hill as a backup just becomes really tough, right? I mean, are you going to suddenly start little Jordan Humphrey, other than you like saying little Jordan Humphrey? No, you're not. So if you are desperate, then maybe in a daily fantasy league, you know, for a buck, then yeah, Taysom Hill comes in. Otherwise, I don't know that, you know, Alvin Kamara, if he plays, then cool. I get him in as a two while he's still banged up. But everywhere else, I'm not playing Callaway or Smith or any of these other guys. I mean, it's not working. There's no fantasy value on that side. And defensively, no thanks. While I don't think Dallas is going to suddenly score 40, I don't know that you're necessarily going to get any dividends when it comes to a pile of sacks and turnovers here either. On the Dallas side, Dak Prescott, to that point, is still going to be a back-end QB1. I can't push him too high in the rankings here, because I think this one's going to be a slowed down affair. I don't think there's a ton of points to be had. Amari Cooper still not practicing as of you and I sitting down to talk here. He was in the facility but didn't practice. You look at Dalton Schultz, maybe some hot route opportunities as a back end tight end one for those leagues that still use tight ends and haven't resorted to all flex. The only guy I'm feeling confident about really is when we get down to Tony Pollard at this point. With Zeke banged up, that means a bigger role for Pollard, certainly double-digit touches, which puts him into a RB2 opportunity, and maybe even an RB1 if Zeke is ruled out by the time we get to that point. Certainly, they've got bigger aspirations, that they still have a lot of divisional games left, Dan, that I think has to play into, you know, what they're looking at as a big-picture item after losing that game to the Raiders.
Yeah, I the Ezekiel Elliott situation is one that has me a bit confused, because the reports that we heard after the Thanksgiving Day loss to the Raiders was that, yeah, you could maybe rest Zeke. And honestly, if you're going to rest him, this is the perfect time to do it. You'd give him a little bit more time. So him being on the practice field Monday in preparation for their game was a bit of a head scratcher, because honestly, I did not expect him to play in Week 13. Something worth watching. I agree on your recommendations of Tony Pollard, and I really agree on the Alvin Kamara stuff with Taysom Hill. Taysom Hill sucks the fantasy lifeblood out of top performances from New Orleans because of how he dominates the football, especially in the red zone. So I think you're going to see fewer touchdowns from Alvin Kamara and fewer touchdowns from Mark Ingram if Taysom Hill ends up taking over the starting quarterback gig. It happened last year, and I think it will happen once again. Get Mike on Twitter at Swollen Dome. You can find me on Twitter at Dan Beyer on Fox, and our executive producer, Ryan Bershinger. You can find him on Twitter at Ryan Bershinger. Before we let you go, guys, I sent a tweet out Monday night, and I was really proud of it. Did you see my Manningcast tweet that I was able to send out?
Wait, let's see.
Yes,
let me
I want to get your thoughts.
At Dan Beyer on Fox.
Yeah, at Dan Beyer on Fox. It. I because there was no Manning cast for week 12, so I developed my own.
Wait, they took another week off?
Yeah, there was no Manning cast. They also
That's a great tweet.
ACC,
wow, that's amazing.
Big Ten Challenge that night. So I will just say that if Peyton and Eli were watching this game at this point. That's how they would look on the screen. You know who that is in the middle? You know who their fourth quarter guest would have been?
That's Sam Kinsley.
Ryan Bershinger, you know who that fourth quarter guest would be?
That is Ed Sheeran.
Yes, bringing out the guitar for the Manning cast.
Nice.
That never happened. Oh, man.
I think that. That's good.
Yeah, we may have to. That is how Eli would look, though, if he had to watch this game. Like so few of us did, but I did watch from beginning to end because that's what we do as Seahawk fans. A rough one, even though, I mean, you want to talk about the worst of all worsts. You get an onside kick, and then you line up wrong, and then you aren't able to recover it. I don't even know if they would have won the game. There was, 15 seconds left on the clock. They didn't have any timeouts, but the Seahawks actually recovered an onside kick on Monday night, but because one of the guys was not lined up correctly, it was wiped away, and then Washington recovered the next one, and the game was over.
Well, what was funny, though, Dan, is I'm on air, right? Smith and I are watching it live, but we have no sound on, so I'm trying to read butchered subtitles on the broadcast, and they show the replay, and I'm like, did he touch it at 9 and like just before 10 yards? Is that what they're looking at? And then finally they busted out the telestrator and started going through the formation. It's like, okay, this is making more sense. But on the first replay, I'm like, don't tell me it's just because he touched it just a hair shy of the 10 yard, because it bounced over the Washington player who did a half-ass dive towards it. So he knew it didn't touch him. But it's like, did he really touch it just before 10 yards? Is that what they're calling? It's like, okay. So it's a legitimate lining up thing. But it also strikes me as, wouldn't you have flagged that like before the play came to fruition?
It was like where the player needed to be between the numbers and the hash marks. That's what it is.
Yes.
So he had to be, and he was actually inside the hash marks, between the two hash marks, and not between the numbers. And that's why they were penalized, and that's why they did not recover the onside kick. But I'll tell you what, a fitting way to put a period on week 12 was with that penalty. Let's put a period on this podcast for the second time. By the way, I will have to say, I think the second time around was much better than the first time. You will never, ever get to hear what we did the first time around, but the good news is you get to hear what we did then the second time around. Again, reach out to Mike on Twitter, at Swollen Dome. Hit me up at Dan Byer on Fox, and our executive producer, the king of streaming defenses, find him on Twitter at Ryan Bershinger. Mike, good luck in the pickups this week, and we'll do it again soon. How about that?
Let's get it. I got to stay alive in this guillotine league, and an all-star team is getting dropped. So with my $11, I am going to have the greatest bargain hunting waiver wire feast that we possibly could have. And maybe I'll go hit the dollar menu at one of the local fast food establishments to celebrate.
Well, I'll just wrap it up by this. I hope the rest of your week is fab. F-A-A-B. All right. Enjoy it for my Garmin. I'm Dan Byer. By the way, that joke was not in the first recording. That's exclusive to the second recording. Talk to you next time. All right, I'm on.